You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
Scabies and gentlemen, boils and ghouls, fiends from beyond the binary, welcome back to another October spooktacular edition of the Toilet of Hell radio show. That's right, this entire month we've been watching some actually really good horror movies. Our bonus show will buck that trend, but this is not the bonus show. We're actually watching something that is worthwhile. I'm your host, Joe Thrash and Kill. With me today, I've got a very special guest. This is a recurring champion, second time sophomore slump. Let's try to beat it, Metal Text.
Hi, yeah, I was on a while ago, so this is nice.
Yeah, the last time you were on, we intentionally kicked up a whole lot of shit for no reason other than it was fun. And that led to, a whole lot of very silly back and forths, and eventually some guy pretending to be my wife and wanting to be like role-playing, like wanting to get fucked by me on Twitter. It was a very strange thing.
Somehow I doubt this one's gonna... I don't... Maybe you get into it with, like, Steven Dorff on Twitter. We'll see.
I'm hoping. Because let's go ahead and let's uncover what we're talking about on this one. You know, the last several weeks, we've watched some really cool movies. We've watched, so far, Audition, In the Mouth of Madness. We've done You're Next. And today, we're gonna flip the script a little bit on something that I think falls into a small and shrinking genre that I would call horror movies for kids.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, we're going to be talking about The Gate.
Yeah, 1987.
So, first of all, I was asked about doing this, and Joe asked me to pick a movie, and I'm actually a huge wuss when it comes to horror movies. So I was like, what do I actually want to watch at night by myself after my kid and my wife go to sleep? Let's do a movie that I thought in my head was probably going to be about as scary as like Gremlins, but actually it ramps it up quite a bit. But so my connection to this movie was, first of all, I was trying to remember something that had some sort of metal connection to it.
There is that in this movie in spades.
Yeah, quite a bit. And then I remembered, I was like looking at movies, and then I remembered this movie because, so this came out in 1987. I was a little kid. I have an older brother that's about 10 years older than me. And I've found a trend among people that have older siblings, I think especially older brothers from around this era. We were all sort of traumatized by like walking in on various things. A lot of it having to do with horror movies. We'll save the other side, but a lot of it with horror movies. Like, I distinctly remember walking in and my brother was watching Hellraiser, and I was like a little kid, and I walked in on Pinhead, and it was terrifying. But then the other one was this, The Gate. I distinctly remember there's a scene with an eyeball in a hand that we'll talk about, and I walked in on that, and it traumatized me for a long time. This movie stuck with me.
So this movie in particular, I have never seen this one until last night, and my wife was like, "What? You've never seen The Gate?" Because she's seen apparently every single horror movie ever. she takes full advantage of our $5 a month Shudder subscription. She's watched everything on the fucking platform.
Nice.
So she was getting a kick out of watching me watch the movie, because I was kind of, you know, making fun of, you know, these 80s actors, and then all of a sudden out of nowhere you've got a scene pop up with like some really expertly done practical effects that involve like a melting face.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like this is kind of goofy, kind of like I mentioned Gremlins, it fits in that sort of that 80s families but spooky sort of genre, but then also it has these unbelievable practical effects in this. Like, there's no CGI in this at all. It's all like weird camera angles and guys in demon suits made to look like they're about 6 inches tall. And yeah. It's great. Like, yeah.
It seems like there's some puppet work in there, too. And, mm-hmm. And I'm a big fan of that. I feel like that's something that modern horror lacks, is slimy little puppets.
Yeah, little weird puppets. One thing I wanted to mention is I looked up... So this movie was directed by this Hungarian-American dude named Tibor Takacs.
Takacs. I think it's Takacs, yeah.
I looked up what else he had done, which it's fucking garbage. Like, it's stuff that
I believe a made-for-TV Sabrina the Teenage Witch movie.
It looked like he made multiple of those. And then what I thought was hilarious is that he seems to have fallen into a nice niche of... Hallmark Channel Christmas movies.
Hell yes.
He's made like four in the last couple of years, and it was just like, dude, get paid. Like, yeah, like
that seems to be a common thing with most of the people involved in this movie. They've gone on to do lucrative gigs that don't require a whole lot of heavy lifting, it seems. We have old Tibor, I apologize, who went on to do things like episodes of the Red Shoe Diaries, which I don't know. People of a certain age will probably know what that is.
He also made on his IMDb, like it's, you know, Sci-Fi Channel movies, but I was laughing at that he did in one year, he made Kraken Tentacles of the Deep, Ice Spiders, and Mega Snake.
Hell yes. I would like to note as well, he directed a couple of episodes of an incredibly short-lived UPN series called The Crow, Stairway to Heaven. And I definitely watched the episodes he did, because I don't think that there were additional episodes after that. So that's my Tibor connection.
Nice, yeah.
And I think that the biggest, though, would be our star is one Steven Dorff. He must have been, I don't know, what, 8 years old when this movie was made?
Yeah, it looks like about that. It was his first movie. This is his first credit on IMDb.
And Steven Dorff, I think the role he's most well known for, aside from blue e-cigarette television ads, would be the role of the Deacon in Blade. Which pretty fucking sick movie.
he also was in Space Truckers.
I did not see that one. What's that one about?
He's been in some garbage, is what he's really been in. But Blade, yeah.
Blade was a good one. So we can't take that away from him. A couple of other quick notes. People that were in this movie. Kelly Irwin was also Cassie Powers in Eastbound and Down. That shouldn't have been as difficult to recall. Kelly Rowan went on to play Kristen Cohen in The O.C., which is a pretty big role. So
yeah.
Pretty star-studded. pretty good stuff. We also have the character of Terry Chandler that plays Steven Dorff, also known as Glenn in the movie, his best friend. And I went down a weird hole trying to find more about this person, Lewis Tripp, which led me to an article published in 2008 on Bloody Good Horror titled, "Where in the World is Lewis Tripp?" Apparently, this kid who played Terry in The Gate, and also there was a sequel, Gate 2, Return of the Nightmare. Did you see that one?
I haven't seen that one. I have not seen that one. We might have to make that a next year's Halloween.
Yeah, the sequel apparently focuses on Terry, who is the metalhead in this one. But this writer, he couldn't find anything about this guy. He eventually found a guy who wrote in... says Patrick, last name withheld, wrote in to say that he worked with Lewis Tripp at a call center in St. Catharines, Ontario. His legal name is now 1220.
His legal name is now 1220?
That's what it says.
All right.
So,
all right, Lewis.
Don't put your children in movies.
No, usually doesn't end up well.
The Gate. Do you remember where you were when you first saw this one?
So the first time that I saw it was I only saw a little brief, that little snippet that traumatized me when I was probably like 5 years old, because my brother probably rented it from like the supermarket or something. We had a little, you know. And then I watched it again when I was about 12 at my house.
That feels more age appropriate.
Yeah, which is like what it was, I think, kind of aimed at. Like it has this sort of, you know, family vibe that's not really a thing that exists anymore, this genre of film. Yeah.
I went looking for reviews from Christian outlets about this movie, because I found that for the last movie that we reviewed, You're Next, for some reason, this right wing like pack did a review of Your Next. They didn't like it, by the way. But there were a lot of wholesome family themes in this one, so I was hoping somebody might have picked up on it, but unfortunately, yeah, that was not the case.
Yeah, this one seems like it's one of those forgotten movies. Like, it did pretty well. Like, I'm looking at the box office, it made more than double its budget, but then it just sort of disappeared, really. It's not like, you know, I think probably because it doesn't have any big names attached to it. Like, there's no big director names or anything, but yeah.
Yeah, it did well enough to spawn the sequel, of course. And also, I thought an interesting thing about this was, if you look at other movies released around this time, you had Hellraiser released in the same movie, of course, not family appropriate, but there was another kind of kid-friendly horror film that dropped out the same year called Monster Squad. Did you ever see that one?
Yes, that is one of my favorites. I love Monster Squad.
I definitely got some similar vibes from this movie. And it just led me to think about, like, maybe this is one of those scenarios where somebody picks up a script and then there's a big rush to get out a bunch of scripts that are similar. So, they're, you know,
close.
Like
a
Gordy / Babe situation.
Yeah.
But let's crack into this a little bit. What, in a nutshell, what would you say The Gate is about?
The Gate is about... The funny thing with this movie is it has, like, what I feel like are multiple sort of false starts and then multiple sort of false endings. Like, it's sort of, it takes a while to get to what the point is, but essentially it's about demons.
Yes.
That are conjured up by like a geode. Essentially, these kids find a geode in their backyard, and through some events that happen, conjure some demons.
Yes.
It has like the weirdest intro. I did not remember this intro at all from when I watched it when I was, you know, 12 or whatever, but the intro is terrifying because the kid wakes up, 12-year-old Stephen Dorff, whatever he is, and his house is abandoned, and like there's breakfast on the table, and it's like his parents just disappeared. And then the sky is this weird sort of orangey apocalyptic color. And he goes out to his treehouse. Like, he climbs up his treehouse, and then it gets struck by lightning and he falls and it's like he's dead.
It is like, a little heavy.
What the hell? It's like the first 2 minutes of the movie.
But
and then that's just sort of like a dream sequence, maybe, possibly.
That's interesting. It is played as it's a dream sequence. He wakes up in his bed and then goes outside to see a crew clearing the tree that once held his treehouse.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe old Stephen Dorff did die in that
It's very strange. It's a very bizarre introduction. Yeah.
There appears to be a giant fucking sinkhole where the tree once was.
It's just his backyard, and there's this giant fucking hole. And it's like, man, if you paid people to do that, I would be upset about this sort of...
Shoddy craftsmanship.
Shoddy work on taking this tree down. Yeah.
So as you do when you're a child and there's a giant hole to fuck around with, you know, he starts fucking around with the hole. He finds a, as you mentioned, a geode in it. His heavy metal friend comes over sporting a vest with a Venom back patch on it.
He has a Venom patch, which I did not remember at all. And also, as far as I could tell, was the only time that you see this Venom patch.
Yeah, he swaps out his battle vest later because he has multiple because he's that true.
Yeah, but it's a dope Venom patch on this jacket. Like, it's a pretty cool jacket.
His buddy sees the geode. He's like, whoa, we could sell these things for like $100. And he finds another.
We're going to be rich, retard. Like, whoa. Hey, whoa. Like,
I suppose we should note, again, this is ostensibly a children's movie, but this was also 1987. So there were a wide variety of slurs thrown about with abandon.
So many. I did not remember that either about this movie.
Yeah, these kids are a little, they got little sailor's mouths, man.
Yeah.
His buddy finds an even bigger rock, a perfectly smooth, what looks to be a geode, and they're pretty excited about cracking that bitch open, and I guess selling it to Marianne Williamson or something. I'm not entirely sure. but this is an important thing I need to bring up. I was perusing IMDb, and I found this factual error. In the movie, and this is knowledge that I feel like all of our listeners need to know. Neither geodes nor thunder eggs form in lightning strikes. Both are of volcanic origin. Technically, a geode is not the same as a thunder egg, which is a filled nodule. The actual residue of molten ground in lightning strikes is called a fulgurite, which is lengthy with branches. It can indeed be very valuable.
So false premise right from the get-go.
Exactly. I appreciate that some geologist nerd was watching this movie like, hold on, pause the movie.
Wait a minute.
The internet is going to hear about this one.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
I forget where we were going with this. Oh, also, for some reason, it's brought up recurring a number of times in the movie. Glenn, our Stephen Dorff character, loves rockets and almost set the house on fire with one. We see his sister throwing away his rockets.
Yeah.
That's
sort of the first introduction, is his sister, who is the most 80s movie sister imaginable. I think she's supposed to be 16, 17. She has ridiculous 80s hair where it's like, it's sort of long in the back, then also sort of like flock of seagulls in the front.
Yeah, and for the party that happens later on in the movie, she makes sure that she crimps her hair for it, which is how you know a fancy thing is happening.
Yeah. Yes. And her name is apparently Alexandra, but then they call her Al, and she gets really mad about it, but then they continue to call her Al for the entire rest of the movie, which is just perfect.
So, yeah. Glenn, also, I think the entire way of the movie, the length of the movie, he's wearing this patch jacket with a bunch of rockets and NASA insignia on it. He's clearly into rockets, and rockets keep coming up for no payoff until much, much, much later.
Yeah.
I was remarking to my wife, I was like, this would be so much better if he was a model train enthusiast instead of, like, a rocket enthusiast.
The finale would have had to be interesting in that case, but we'll get there.
They could have made it work. I think they could have made it work.
Yeah, okay.
Glenn's parents, they gotta go away for some reason, as 80s parents do.
80s parents just loved leaving their kids alone for a week at a time.
Yeah, they threatened to get a babysitter. As you mentioned, Al is 16 years old and not too excited about that. And I also, like, I was a child in the 80s briefly. I remember being left alone for a long time because it's fine. It's totally fine. Yeah. I didn't have the, I guess, professional class 80s parents that that these kids had. They leave the kids. They're like, hey, nobody can come over, no parties. What do you think's going to happen when you tell a kid no parties? You leave out the, you know, the back door. They got to throw a party.
This is an 80s movie after all. They throw a party.
A bunch of shitty little teenagers are spilling beers everywhere, smoking cigarettes. I was wondering about that. Like, you know, I guess my folks didn't smoke cigarettes, but wouldn't you know if just like 40 teenagers were blowing through a pack of Camels in your house?
Yeah, I think I would leave a residue.
Yeah.
If you will. Yeah.
This is one of those things in older movies that always bothers me. It's like they're going to know, you dumbasses. Yeah.
Also, you left 75 beer bottles in the trash can. There's that too.
One of Al's weird friends is very into, I don't know, woo, as it were, and decides that people can levitate, which is pretty exciting, to be honest with you.
they're sort of doing the stiff as a
light as a feather, stiff as a board.
They're sort of doing that game, but without actually saying it, which I thought was weird.
They attempt to levitate a 30-year-old teenager. It fails. He's too heavy. So they make Glenn do it, and it works. Glenn he starts floating up into the ceiling, and then he fucks it all up and knocks out an entire ceiling light.
Like slams his head into the ceiling light. They, like, right before this, they discover, so they break open the geode.
Right. Oh, sorry, that's important, yeah.
They break open the geode, like, upstairs, and they find, like, in a notepad that there's all this weird writing.
Was that a notepad? For some reason in my head, I was like, that was like a magnetic Woolly Willy or something like that.
Yeah. It's a what the hell is that thing called? Like an Etch-a-Sketch, essentially, but not. Yeah, it's like one of those. And it has these weird sort of, like, Star Wars writing on it. Like, they look like sort of glyphs.
Yeah.
And then they go downstairs.
Well, somehow Glenn is able to interpret these glyphs because he starts reading, like, the Klaatu Barata.
He just knows how to read these things for some reason. And then he levitates.
Pretty tight. Also, nobody's like bothered or in any way amazed that this child was just floating 9 feet in the air. They're just like,
they just get angry at him. They're like, fuck you, Glenn, you fucked up the park, floating asshole, what's wrong with you? Like, nobody cares, they're just mad.
It's at this next little part is, I think, I wrote a mean thing about you on Twitter. I don't know if you saw or not, but it's
a lot of people write mean things about me on Twitter.
This is the first part of the movie that got my goat a little bit, because everybody goes home, everybody goes to sleep. Terry, the metalhead friend, wakes up in Glenn's house because there's some weird demonic lights or something, and he goes downstairs and sees the spirit of his dead mother. Who is saying that she misses him and loves him. He goes to embrace her. And at that moment, Glenn and Al go down the stairs and see him, where he's actually embracing the dead family dog.
Well, the dog is definitely, like, briefly alive in this scene and then dies. And it's horrible. This is the first horrifying scene. Like, up to this point it was pretty standard, you know, 80s movie, and then it was like, oh yeah, this does actually have some really kind of disturbing moments for a supposedly children's movie. His dead mom turns into his dead dog. It's fucked up.
It's pretty heavy. In the morning, our boy Terry goes home. This is, I think, the funniest moment in the movie for me, is he goes home and looks at the fridge and sees a note from his dad that says, "I'm gone on business," and business is misspelled.
Which is it supposed to be misspelled, or is that a continuity? Like, is that an error, or...
I'm not entirely certain.
Is his dad just an idiot? Like, I don't know.
So, we've established that Terry has a dead mother and a clearly negligent father.
Clearly negligent moron father.
So he does what every latchkey child of the 80s does, and he goes to his room and reenacts a Quiet Riot video. He kicks on his stereo and is just jamming out to some 80s power metal.
Yeah. This is the first, like, we got a little hint of the metalness with his Venom backpatch, but this is the first real scene of it. And this is apparently, this is the one where it's actually the Canadian band.
I thought it was, but I was looking closely at the album, the logo on the album. It looked like it was slightly different from the Sacrifice that, like, Propagandhi, did the split with.
Well, I think Sacrifice is fake, but it was, the music itself, I think, is the Killer Dwarves.
Oh, that's right. The backpatch that appears on Terry's jacket from then on out is the Killer Dwarves.
Yeah, and I think the music actually is Killer Dwarves. Like, they say it's Sacrifice, but I think it was actually them, who were, like, they started out, I had never heard them before, but so I listened to them as a result of this movie, and they started out as sort of, like, sort of Iron Maiden-esque, that sort of new wave, you know, British metal type stuff, but then they just turn into full-on butt rock at some point and just went with it. Like, yeah, it's bad.
That's that was a common path as well, for 80s bands. Mm-hmm. From, I'm trying to listen to, like, later era TSOL.
Oh, boy. Yeah, no. Yeah.
So yeah, he's looking at his album artwork and reading the lyric sheet, and Terry decides that this album from the fake band Sacrifice, the Dark Book, is related to the weird hole in the apparitions that they were seeing the night before. And he speculates that that hole is actually a gateway to the old ones.
Yeah, they never really specify, like, it's not like the Judeo-Christian hell is ever mentioned in this. It's always a gateway to old ones and evil gods, and, like, it's very sort of vague about it.
Yes, we've established that they're very old and they're very upset that other gods have usurped them.
Yeah.
But it doesn't get into, like, the Lovecraftian thing or anything like that.
No. It gets sort of... I feel like it's vague. It's sort of touching on that a little bit. But, yeah.
So he goes back. He shows Glenn his album, and he's convincing him, like, hey, man, this is the answer. we have... I think that they decide that they the thing that would fully open the gate is if there was a sacrifice dropped into it. Is that what the decision was?
Yeah, they decide that somehow the album and the band concept is sort of hinting at what they would have to do to open this up.
So at that moment, Al's quasi-boyfriend goes over to help out by throwing their dead dog down that hole.
Yeah, the segue there that we just had is about the segue in the movie. It just cuts from them looking at this album and talking about it to then this dude just throwing a dead dog in a hole. That's it.
The boys go back later. They see that the hole is closed, and they're like, "All right, job well done, man."
Yeah, we're done here. It's fine.
This next part was also kind of kind of heavy. They go to bed that night, and there's a swarm of moths, which was kind of a callback earlier to Terry being a weird creep with killing bugs. Shattering Glenn's bedroom, and they find the dead dog underneath Terry's bed, which... Leave the poor dead dog alone, man.
Again, the dead dog. The dead dog comes up a lot. And then we get these, like, these demon arms. We get the first hint of demon stuff here because they start trying to get Al. Start to come up. And then we get, like, this very inept sort of rescue scene, if you can even call it that. Like, the shitty kids, Terry and Glenn, have to go rescue her, and it's just sort of like standing there yelling at it for a while.
It's pretty half-assed, but but they pull it off, you know. Gumption and stick-to-itiveness save the day in the end. So they run outside. They're fleeing the demon arms, where they find Glenn's parents.
Glenn and Al's parents.
Who announce that they're mad and disappointed in their children, which is, it's pretty heavy. It's pretty heavy.
This is a pretty heavy, yeah.
Glenn reaches up to his father's face to try to, like, fight him off, and just grabs a fistful of fleshy goo in just an insanely dark turn from what was an otherwise pretty lighthearted, aside from the whole dead dog business, a pretty lighthearted movie.
Yeah. And then the effects on this are great. Like, this is the first one of these effects that is really, like, well done.
It's pretty sweet. It's, if I'm being totally honest, it's sweet as hell, listener. If you want to watch this movie, like, that's the part you definitely have to pay attention for, because you know, I've seen all kinds of splatter movies, and few do it as well as that little bit.
Yeah. And then his dad fucking choke, like, lifts him up like a wrestler style. Like, he puts his hand on his neck and just lifts him up in the air and talks about how disappointed he is with him.
Yeah, man. Didn't have any flashbacks there at all. They get away. Al goes back and checks out the yard, and they see all these tiny little demons, which are going to be a recurring thing. These little Gulliver's Travels imps.
Yeah, and I love these dudes. I love them. They apparently were guys in suits. They were full-size dudes that, in these suits.
That rolls so hard.
It's so good, because I thought at first they were puppets, but apparently I was reading some behind-the-scenes stuff. They were guys in actual suits, and they did these crazy shots. Like, the set must have been huge.
Also,
make them look super tiny.
I thought they were puppets as well, and that's great, because it also explains their somewhat varying size in certain shots. In some scenes, they're the size of a child's foot. In other scenes, they're half the size of a kid. And that makes a lot more sense when you're having to fight with the camera's perspective.
Yeah, forced perspective stuff. Yeah.
They go try to retrieve that sweet sacrifice album, and it bursts into flames, as all good metal albums do.
Which is extremely metal.
Yeah.
I forgot one of the most important things we forgot here when they're talking about the album, and when Terry is talking about the band, he like mentions how cool they are, and the like final thing about how cool they are is that they recorded one album and then they died. They like recorded this album and then they died in a plane crash. It's like, how fucking metal is that? Yeah.
Yeah. You predicted a lot of things about metal. Terry was more true than most.
Yeah.
I believe it's at this point that they try to stop the hole from widening by reading from the Bible. Terry starts reading from Psalms, and the hole starts to close, and he's very excited about it. So excited that he doesn't notice when his friends are like, "Hey, man, you should probably step back." He's like, "No, it's fine. It's working."
It's cool. It's
falls down the fucking hole like an asshole.
I also love when they pick up the Bible and they say, like, oh, maybe the Bible will help. They will read the Bible. And then Terry says, what should I read? And the other ones are like, it doesn't, just read something. It doesn't matter. they tell them, they're like, it doesn't, just open it up and read it. Give a shit.
Yeah, that's how religion works. It's fine.
But yeah, then he falls down the hole like a dipshit. And the effects on the falling down are not the best. No. We talked about the practical effects. I think this is the worst one. Because it goes from looking like a kid to looking like a full-size stunt person. I'm not sure if it was a man or a woman, but like they grow like 2 feet when he falls down the hole.
Yeah, and those little guys, they're popping up and attacking him at the bottom of the hole. But he's able to just, like, kind of wave his hand and knocks him back 40 fucking feet. But he's terrified of, like, a dozen of them coming after him. Like, you're much bigger than them. You're fine.
Yeah, you can just kick these things around. Yeah.
So, you know, I think that was the one that tested my limits of credulity with this one, credulousness. Nothing else, though.
And then we get probably one of my favorite scenes in this movie is next. Is he reads, you know, he's continuing to sort of read from the Bible, but then he throws the Bible and it explodes. It just fucking blows up.
That's pretty fucking sweet, dude.
It just explodes. Presumably it's like the demon energy and the Bible energy sort of combined, but it's just hilarious because I did not at all expect it. He just wings the Bible and then it's just...
Yeah, Terry, he's pulled out of the hole. He picks up the Bible again, can't find his place, so he just starts trying to read from the beginning, says, fuck this, and tosses it, and it works.
It works. You didn't have to read from it at all. You just had to throw the Bible at it.
Yeah, man. The Bible works in mysterious ways.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're pretty excited. The hole is sealed again, so presumably, you know, they're fine.
Second time this hole has been sealed, we're good, we're done, right?
Yeah, we are. I forgot to mention earlier there were a couple of other scenes with the dead dog. I'm just remembering them now. Just giving me fucking flashbacks.
I forgot how much Dead Dog was in this movie.
Yeah, the shitty boyfriend, like, is driving it around in the front seat of his car trying to take it to, like, the animal shelter.
I forgot about that. Oh, my God, yeah.
We won't come back to the Dead Dog, probably.
Well, we will.
Yeah, but... fuck. Yeah. There was one of those, like, little asides in the earlier exposition of the movie where Glenn is talking to his dad and he's saying, Terry creeps me out. Well, Terry's mom died, so he's kind of weird. He's like, weird, yeah. Kid. But he was telling me that this house is haunted because when they were building it, a construction guy died in the construction, so they just sealed him into the walls. Like
they just bricked him up.
They live in like a shitty suburban McMansion, so there's I don't know if there's enough room to like sarcophagize a guy, but this is one of those asides that seemed extraneous at the time, but later on it seems and it was incredibly relevant. Because they go to bed and a wall breaks open with a construction worker's corpse crashing through. It grabs Terry and pulls him into the walls, which seal behind him.
Yeah, this was horrifying.
This is scary. Extremely dark. You were describing this before we started recording. Why don't you go ahead and describe the rest of the action in this scene?
Yeah, so this was one of the things that stood out to me of seeing this when I was younger is this corpse, he's got sort of like zombie makeup on and it's pretty fucking creepy, like especially for a kid's movie. But so it seals behind him. That's horrifying. Terry's gone. And then Owl is in her bedroom and the corpse zombie dude just appears in the mirror. And I think this was the scariest. I think that's the scariest scene in the entire movie. Is that dude just shows up in the mirror, and then Glenn sort of just like slides into the room and is like, "Oh shit, Terry's gone," and then notices that he's in the mirror, and then he fucking chucks a boombox at him.
Yeah, it's that scene was so scary that there was an entire who's the fucking guy that played Jack Bauer? Doesn't matter.
Sutherland.
Yeah, Kiefer Sutherland. There was an entire horror movie based on this exact same concept called Mirror, starring Kiefer Sutherland, in which he's like a abandoned mall cop, and things start appearing in the mirrors, and it's the exact same principle. This idea is very good in this one scene. Extrapolated out to an entire movie, it is very stupid. So sometimes you should just, like, you know, focus
just
on...
Just leave it.
Yeah, just... Yeah. Have little details. You don't need to continue writing.
Yeah. But I thought this worked really well. Like, this was a scary scene of, like, you get this thing, you're not sure if Terry's dead, if he's just gone, and then the ghost dude, whatever he is, pops up again in the mirror.
Yeah.
It's creepy. And then... When he throws this like stereo thing at him, the construction worker dude sort of explodes into those tiny demons that we saw before.
It's very much Station, like from Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Yes.
And it's pretty sweet. So he disintegrates into the little demons, and they start trying to like build up back again, at which point Al is like, go grab Dad's gun.
yeah, which is another strange, we don't find out much about these parents at all, but yeah, apparently they're gun owners also in this like whatever suburban neighborhood they're in.
It totally checks out, man. Like, that was the height of, like, Reagan crime panic or whatever. So, of course, you have to be a responsible gun owner for your kid's safety. They have to know where to get it. they go open the gun case, at which point demonic Terry appears and bites the shit out of Glenn's hand.
He attacks Glenn. And then... Glenn stabs him in the eye with a Barbie doll foot.
And it's pretty fucking gory.
It's gory. Like, I did not remember that either. Like, it's pretty brutal, which I found a little, like, interview with this director who said that apparently they had to cut frames out of this scene to have it not be R-rated.
Oh, shit.
So apparently it was even worse than this. And, like, it's pretty fucking brutal. It is a Barbie. He grabs a Barbie doll and he shoves it leg first into a kid's eye.
Yeah, that Barbie leg just comes out soaked in blood.
Yeah. It's gory.
He's able to free Glenn from Terry's mouth, at which point the construction worker demon appears in the closet. They aim and shoot it straight in the face with a shotgun, which doesn't work.
doesn't appear to do anything.
And instead, the demon grabs Al and pulls her into the walls. So at this point, Glenn is remembering the lyrics from Sacrifice and realizing that it requires two human sacrifices to open up the gate. So he's realizing, oh shit, things are bad now. He's looking out the window. There's like a tornado of souls like appearing above the hole.
Yeah, shit's getting real outside in their sinkhole.
And he's like, oh, my friend and my sister are dead. That's not good. but he realizes that his sister bought him a rocket. So he's like, you know, he's a child and he's using what he has. He's home aloneing it. He's taking the weapons available to him, which in this case is a rocket. So he's trying to go up, grab it out of his room, and launch that motherfucker. As he's running up the stairs, like, the entire house is collapsing. Like, he's narrowly able to avoid the stairs. Like, I thought that was really well done as well.
This is another really well done special effects scene of, like, he's running up the stairs as the house is disintegrating into the pit. And it's great. Like, it's just, you can tell it's like this forced perspective shot of a little model, like, disintegrating, but it looks great.
It's awesome.
He's
trying to launch his rocket. His matches keep blowing out due to the aforementioned tornado of souls.
That's lighting matches in a tornado. Apparently a tornado of souls is apparently not easy to do.
Yeah. Yeah, so he gets knocked down and confronted by this huge old god. Now, is this a man in a suit, or what is this exactly?
I'm not. This one, I think, is probably a model. Like, based on the way that it kind of moved, it seemed like it was some stop motion animation to me. Like, the way that it looked kind of jerky.
Yeah,
but I'm not sure.
I think from the full perspective, there was definitely some stop motion, but there's some close-ups that it might be rubber suited, or it might be a puppet.
You know,
the things that you had to do before you had a green screen.
Yeah.
It grabs Glenn and takes his hand.
It's sort of like the weirdest scene. Like, watching this again, I remember just like, it appears and it grabs his hand and does something. But the weirdest part about this scene is it's like, oddly, he almost seems friendly to Glenn.
He's like, hey, the bro. Way that
he kind of like grabs him and he gives him like a little like tap tap on the head. He gives him like a little like mess up his hair first.
Yeah.
Which is very weird. Like, it just doesn't make a ton of sense. He like, this huge demon shows up and he's just like, hey, what's up, little dude?
I bring you love. He's like, fuck you!
Yeah. And then he touches his hand, and then this scene is the scene that gave small toddler text nightmares for years, because I walked in on my older brother watching this, on this scene where Glenn turns his hand over, and he looks at his hand, and there's a, like, pretty decently realistic looking eyeball in his hand.
That eyeball was actually the literal eyeball of the guy that did all of the effects on this movie, who, by the way, I should note, went on to win 3 Oscars for special effects with the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
All right. So that dude did well.
Oh, yeah. He never has to fuck with a plaster cast again.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And so, that scene horrified me and gave me nightmares, which upon rewatching this is not one of the scarier parts of the movie. There are definitely scarier parts of this movie, but that really stuck with 5-year-old or whatever it was, me having nightmares about opening my hand up and seeing an eyeball in there.
Well, I mean, that's pretty disturbing, but I'd say that more disturbing is what happens immediately afterwards.
He then stabs the shit out of the eyeball.
There's a waste basket full of glass shards. So he just grabs one and right through the eye hand.
Yeah, which maybe this scene, there's 2 scenes of eyeball stabbing in this, so I'm not sure when he was talking about the eyeball stabbing if it was this one or the other one to Terry that they had to cut frames on, because this one's pretty brutal too.
Yeah, lots of good eyeball gore for this children's horror movie.
Again, children's horror movie.
That weakens the demon, brings him back to Earth, at which point Glenn is able to his matches don't work, so he used the battery-powered launcher for his rocket launcher. He's got to, like, pull the D batteries out of his flashlight to power this goddamn thing.
Which is honestly a good 80s child callback of having to, like, scrounge the house for D batteries.
Yeah.
I appreciated it.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than seeing a toy, opening it up, and it's like, you have to have 17 D batteries. They don't come included. Fuck you.
Yeah.
So he launches the rocket into the demon. It explodes. At which point, you know, we have our first heartwarming moment of the movie, if you don't count the demon giving a hair tousle to Glenn. Angus, the old dog, stops being dead. He's fine. Yeah.
He's fine.
He comes out and he's like, hey, bro, what's up? And Terry and Al emerge. And then they embrace and they're like, oh, I guess we got to clean up this place before the parents get home.
Freeze frame.
Yeah. Overall, I was very impressed with the quality of this one. I didn't know what to expect going in, but there's a lot of bang for your buck here, especially like yeah. Put in it's an 80-minute movie.
Yeah, it's a quick one. Yeah. It's one of those good 80s, you know, kids teen movies where they let them run under 90 minutes. Yeah.
I don't even know what the comparison for horror for children is nowadays. I know they made that like Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark movie. I didn't see that one because
yeah, I didn't see that one.
That the books just gave me horrific nightmares as a child because of the artwork.
Yeah, the artwork's horrifying. Yeah, I did love those movies as a kid. Those books as a kid. Yeah,
I really can't think of anything similar. In the 80s, you had a few things like Poltergeist, which could have been given for a children audience, a child audience.
Monster Squad, yeah.
To a lesser extent, something like The Goonies. There was definitely Goonies vibes here.
Mm-hmm.
But this is it seems like a mostly untapped market now. We need to get back to terrifying children and giving them emotional scars that they remember into their adulthood.
The closest one that I would think that, I mean, it's pretty old at this point, but did you ever see the Monster House movie, the CG Monster House movie?
No.
What? So it's, God, who made that movie? Is it like a DreamWorks movie? I don't even remember who made this one.
Let's see.
I've
never even seen anything with this.
It's Steven Spielberg's Amblin Entertainment. Yeah. Watch Monster House. It's like it's a kid, you know, it's like a kid's movie-ish because it's animated, it's about kids about this age, but it's pretty creepy. But that's 2006. I can't think of anything else newer than that, really.
What was the Dia de los Muertos Disney movie that came out of
Coco?
Coco. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's horrifying for different reasons. It's like, yeah expose your children to the concept of death.
Death. There were some goosebumps things.
Goosebumps, great. Yeah. Those. That's a great example. They recently made that with Jack Black, I guess. Again, I didn't see that because I'm 32 years old, so.
But yeah, overall, I definitely enjoyed this more than I kind of expected I would. It's a decent watch.
If you were to show this to your children now, which I think that'd be fine, except you would have to explain maybe some words used in the movie are not okay to use.
Yeah, the sister in this movie says a gay slur about 100 times. Like, it's pretty... I mean, I know that's typical of 80s movies, but it's pretty extreme here. Like, it's practically every line of dialogue that she has. She's dropping F-bombs. Like,
yep.
Yeah.
Glenn also does it to the sister's boyfriend, just a defiant yell at him.
Felt
undeserved.
Yeah. He was dealing with a dead dog. I mean, come on.
Like, I'm going to say that for this one, I'm going to go ahead and give this a rating because I've been doing that for all of these. I'm going to go ahead and give this one a 7 with the asterisk that this is definitely, you know, watch this with your kid eyes. Don't expect something like Audition. It's not horrific in that way. It does have some very, very good effects and some a few good creep outs there as well.
Yeah.
What's your grade there?
I'm probably about the same. I would say probably 6.5, 7, something like that. It's a solid watch. Doesn't have like this sort of quotable, super memorable scenes like something like Monster Squad had, but like it's in that genre. It works. Yeah.
I think
practical effects are great.
Oh, very good. Before we leave this podcast, we need to pivot to something, another subject that is truly terrifying. And that is your current project, listening to the Merzbau suitcase. What is it called?
We're listening to the Merzbox, which is a 50 CD box set that Merzbau put out of his work from it starts in 1979. It goes through the 90s, essentially. It's 50 CDs. My buddy Eric Easy Snappin' on Twitter and I are listening to a CD every week. It's a terrible idea.
So you just released, let's see, what is this? Episode 29.
So we've done 29 of these things. Yeah.
So yeah. For the uninitiated, what could somebody expect?
So Merzbau is mostly known for his harsh noise, like analog squealing noise for, you know, 60 minutes straight. The Merzbox we're finding has elements of that, but also a lot of other weird shit on it. Like there's a record on there where apparently for a while Merzbau was actually two guys and they went to Russia and they were supposed to do a show and they started doing like their typical noise, loud cacophony thing. And apparently the Russians were like, no, stop. Absolutely not. You're not going to do this. So the first track is like pretty harsh noise stuff. And then the second track, I think they just made them like play traditional instruments. so then it turns into sort of like a freeform jazz performance for a half an hour. And there's two other Russian dudes that are on it. And it's like this, you have the two Merzbau guys kind of playing off of each other. And then the two Russian guys kind of playing off of each other, but they're not playing together as a foursome at all. So you have sort of two freeform jazz things happening at the same time. So that's one of them.
See, that sounds like fun. But it's also an incredible commitment that you've made to roughly 50 hours of noise.
it's like everyone we're finding. So it's on CDs, and Masami Akita, Merzbau, he really he wants to utilize the full 70 minutes of a CD. So we have a lot of them that are like, oh, I released this as a 45 minute tape in the 80s. I could just put 45 minutes of a tape on a CD, but instead I'm going to take like half of another tape and also put that on here. So then we have like a 68 minute CD. So it's not just one thing. It's like multiple. It started as sort of like a dare from a friend of mine. I was joking about doing like a blog, listening to it and writing something about it. And they were like, make it a fucking podcast, you coward.
Yeah, it's true. Nobody reads blogs anymore. These podcasts, they're the hot new thing.
Yeah. So I had to bring somebody else stupid enough into it to do this. And Eric is that stupid person.
Great podcast voice, by the way.
He has a fantastic podcast voice. I had to get somebody with a decent podcast voice because mine doesn't do it. But so Eric has a great sort of like, he could do NPR. Like he could do that sort of NPR voice. So he does the intro and does this real, yeah. And then I go on there and say, dude, 800 times an episode.
Folks, check out the Merzbox. And check out
Immersbox.
I apologize. I know that there's some rivals, some real shitbags out there that tried to steal your thunder.
they're all right, dudes. We mended that bridge. But so what was beef. Weird? Yeah, what was weird was they also started a Merzbow themed podcast around the same time as us, which I never in the world thought there would be more than one Merzbow themed podcast. But they actually are like noise musicians. They had some clout, so they got sort of more attention on their podcast right away. And Merzbow, the dude, he's on Twitter, and he like had this ranting tweet session where he does not approve of their podcast. He was like, "This is not. I don't like this. I don't approve of it." He sent all kinds of like really fucked up mean messages to one of the dudes, like in a private message. And so they stopped their Merzbow podcast because they just didn't think, you know, he doesn't approve of this. We were fans of his. Now we're questioning if we are because he was such a dickbag to us.
If Merzbow had done a similar thing to you, would you cave to the pressure or would you tell him to stuff it?
No, I would tell him to fuck off. Absolutely. Yeah. No. So we kept going. They switched to just like a general sort of noise experimental music podcast. We are thundering on as the only unapproved Merzbow podcast.
Hell yes. Accept no substitute. Damn the man. Listen to a Merzbox and follow at Metal Text on Twitter, which you already are. Why am I telling you that? Every one of you that's listening to this already follows him, already retweets him.
Probably.
Metal Text, thanks so much for coming on and doing this with me. I'm glad that you could share your childhood trauma with me.
Yeah, thanks. It was a good time.
We'll see you next week, everyone. Love you.
Bye.
You're listening to 66.6 FM. Radio TOVH. The Flush.